Well, appropriate time has arrived. I'll call the meeting to order. Good morning and welcome, everyone. This is an open meeting of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board on February 26, 2008. We welcome those of you who have joined us today both in person and listening to the webcast of this meeting. Today, the board will consider a recommendation to propose a new auditing standard that would supersede the board's interim concurring partner review requirement and a conforming amendment to the board's interim quality control standards. Before we proceed with the agenda, I will note for the record that all board members are present. The first and only order of business before the board today is a staff recommendation that the board propose a new auditing standard on engagement quality review. To present the staff's recommendation on this agenda item, I will turn to our chief auditor, Thomas Ray. Tom.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Greg Skates and I are pleased to be here this morning to propose a new auditing standard, engagement quality review, and an amendment to the board's interim quality control standards. Greg and I will highlight the significant provisions of the proposal. The Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002, among other things, directed the board to include in the auditing standards that it adopts requirements that each registered public accounting firm provide a concurring or second partner review and approval of each audit report and concurring approval of issuance by a qualified person associated with the public accounting firm. This mandate placed renewed emphasis on the importance to audit quality of an objective second look at the engagement before the firm issues its report. Well-performed engagement quality reviews are an important element in establishing a basis for investor reliance on audits. An engagement quality review conducted contemporaneously with the audit engagement may identify and correct a problem before the engagement is completed. In April 2003, the board adopted, as part of its interim quality control standards, a then-existing requirement for concurring partner reviews that was applicable to members of the SEC practice section of the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. Currently, the board's interim requirement applies only to registered firms that were members of the SEC practice section. The proposed standard would supersede the board's interim requirement and would be applicable to all public accounting firms registered with the board and for all engagements conducted pursuant to the standards of the PCAOB. In developing this proposal, the staff evaluated the board's interim requirement and the similar requirements of the International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board, the IAASB, of the International Federation of Accountants, and the AICPA Auditing Standards Board. As Greg will discuss, there are many similarities between our proposal and the standards developed by the profession. We also considered the advice of the Board Standing Advisory Group, which considered the subject on two separate occasions. Additionally, the results of our inspections and enforcement activities informed our approach. Our proposal builds on the foundation laid by the Board's interim requirement and the standards developed by the profession. One way in which we did this is by including an explicit focus on identifying and reviewing those areas of the engagement likely to contain higher risks. Greg will elaborate on this feature of the proposal as well. Before I turn the floor over to Greg, I would like to recognize the many people who have made substantial contributions to this project. First, I would like to thank Gary Holstrom, formerly Associate Chief Auditor and Director of Research. Gary started this project while he was a member of our staff, and he gave considerable thought and effort in the development of our approach. Greg Skates adopted this project when Gary retired, and was assisted by Keisha Campbell, Assistant Chief Auditor. I also would like to thank our inspections and enforcement divisions and the Offices of General Counsel and Research Analysis for their insights and assistance. Of course, I also thank the board and its staff for your perspectives on this important project and your support in bringing this proposal before you today. Finally, I thank the staff of the Securities and Exchange Commission who provided timely and helpful assistance and advice. I now turn the floor over to Greg Skates, Deputy Chief Auditor, who will complete our overview of the proposal. Greg?
Thank you, Tom. As Tom mentioned, this proposed standard would require an engagement quality review for all engagements performed in accordance with the standards of the PCAOB. Such engagements include integrated audits of financial statements, audits of financial statements only, and reviews of interim financial information. Due to the benefits we believe are gained from such a review, the proposed standard also would apply to other audit and attestation engagements performed in accordance with the standards of the PCAOB. For example, under the SEC's Regulation AB and related rules, the annual report for a class of asset-backed securities must include a report regarding its assessment of compliance with certain specified servicing criteria and an attestation report by a registered public accounting firm on that assessment. This attestation report is to be prepared in accordance with the standards of the PCAOB. Under the proposed standard, a registered firm would be required to obtain an engagement quality review to issue this attestation report. The proposed standard builds on the interim requirement with respect to the qualifications of an engagement quality reviewer. Under the proposed standard, the engagement quality reviewer may be a partner or another individual in the firm or an individual outside the firm. Under the proposed standard, the reviewer is required to be independent of the client, be competent, perform the assigned procedures with integrity, and maintain objectivity with respect to the engagement and the engagement team. The proposal we are asking the board to consider today requires the reviewer to possess the level of knowledge and competence required to serve as the engagement partner. For example, a person assigned to perform the engagement quality review for an audit of a public company engaged in oil and gas exploration and development should have experience similar to serve as the engagement partner for the audit of a public company in this specialized industry. Similar to the interim requirement, the proposed standard allows the engagement quality reviewer to seek assistance from others to supplement his or her knowledge and understanding of the issues and risks related to the engagement. For example, the engagement quality reviewer might seek assistance from others when reviewing work performed in certain specialized areas or when challenged to complete the work in a timely manner, such as for a large engagement. However, as emphasized in the proposal, the engagement quality reviewer has overall responsibility for this engagement quality review. The engagement quality reviewer also must comply with all applicable independence requirements. Also, to maintain objectivity with respect to the engagement team and all aspects of the engagement, and to perform the review with integrity, the reviewer under this proposal would be prohibited from making decisions on behalf of the engagement team, assuming any responsibilities of the engagement team and supervising the engagement team. However, similar to the interim requirement, the proposed standard would not prohibit the engagement team from consulting with the engagement quality reviewer and recognizes that it is often desirable that consultations take place at the time issues arise rather than at the conclusion of the engagement. In such cases, however, care should be taken not to impair the engagement quality reviewer's objectivity. Finally, with respect to the qualifications, the proposed standard would require the engagement quality reviewer to be an associated person of either the firm issuing the engagement report or another registered public accounting firm. The reviewer could be a partner or employee of the firm issuing the report, an individual associated with another registered firm, or an individual who becomes associated with the firm issuing the report by performing the review. Thus, any qualified person could perform the review regardless of whether that person was previously associated with a registered public accounting firm. Now, turning to the engagement review process itself. Similar to the related standards of the IAASB, or the International Auditing and Insurance Standards Board, under the proposed standard, the engagement quality review process should include an evaluation of the significant judgments made by the engagement team and the conclusions reached informing the overall conclusion on the engagement. To identify and evaluate the significant judgments and conclusions, the engagement quality reviewer should begin the review process with discussions with the engagement partner and, as necessary, with other members of the engagement team. This proposal also specifies certain procedures that should be a part of every review process. Such procedures include, for example, evaluating engagement planning, including the judgments about made about materiality and the identification of significant risk, reading the financial statements, management report on internal control, or other information that is the subject of the particular engagement, and reviewing the engagement completion documents. Some of these procedures are similar to those described in the existing requirement, and they are also similar with, in many respects, to those contained in the IAASB standards. After performing these procedures, and based on other relevant knowledge of the reviewer would be required to assess whether there are areas within the engagement that pose a higher risk that the engagement team failed to obtain sufficient competent evidence or reach an appropriate conclusion. For those areas that pose such risk, the engagement quality reviewer should evaluate whether the engagement team performed procedures that were responsive to the assessed risk, the judgments made by the engagement team were reasonable in the circumstances, and the results of the procedures support the engagement team's conclusion. This risk-based approach reflects the staff's view that the engagement quality review should be a rigorous process in order to identify significant problems in a timely manner for correction. Now, turning to the documentation of the engagement quality review, the board's interim requirement with respect to the engagement documentation of the engagement itself, the board's interim requirement makes reference to certain documentation to be reviewed by the concurring partner. However, the interim requirement does not explicitly direct the reviewer to evaluate whether the engagement documentation complies with audit documentation requirements or supports the conclusions reached by the engagement team. The staff believes that an important aspect of the engagement quality review is for the engagement quality reviewer to evaluate, for those areas reviewed, whether the engagement team's documentation supports the conclusions reached, indicates that the engagement team responded appropriately to the matters that present a significant risk, and that they meet the documentation requirements of auditing standard number 3 on audit documentation. As mandated by the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, this proposed standard requires the engagement quality reviewer to complete his or her review prior to providing concurring approval of issuance. Thus, the proposed standard states the firm must not issue the engagement report or communicate the engagement conclusion to the client before the engagement quality reviewer provides concurring approval. This proposed requirement reflects the staff's view that the engagement quality review should serve as a meaningful opportunity to identify problems and time to correct those problems. This proposal also would establish a new requirement that the engagement quality reviewer must meet in order to provide such a concurring approval of issuance. Under the interim requirement, the concurring partner reviewer is to conclude, based on his or her review, that no matters have come to his or her attention that would cause the reviewer to believe that the audit was not performed in accordance with the standards of the PCAOB, or that the financial statements are not in conformity with generally accepted accounting principles. In contrast, though, this proposed standard provides that the engagement quality reviewer must not provide concurring approval of issuance if, one, the engagement team failed to obtain sufficient competent evidence in accordance with the standards of the PCAOB, two, the engagement team reached an inappropriate overall conclusion on the subject matter of the engagement. Three, the firm's report, if a report is to be issued, is not appropriate in the circumstances. Or four, the firm is not independent of the client. The staff also recognizes that differences of opinion could occur between the engagement team and the engagement quality reviewer during this review process. If those differences have not been resolved to the engagement quality reviewer's satisfaction, the engagement quality reviewer must not provide concurring approval. Now, turning to documentation of the review process, the PCAOB inspection teams have observed apparent deficiencies in the documentation of the concurring partner review, which prevented a determination as to whether the scope of the review was appropriate and also may have contributed to the firm's failure to properly address the concurring partner's findings. Similarly, Academic research also has indicated deficiencies in documentation of the concurring partner review. The board's interim requirement provides that the engagement documentation should contain evidence that the reviewer has complied with the firm's policies in conducting a concurring partner review, including documentation of the reviewer's conclusion. This proposed standard is more specific with regard to documentation of the engagement quality review. Under the proposal, the engagement documentation should indicate who performed the review, the areas of the engagement subject to the review, the procedures performed by the reviewer, when the review procedures were performed, the results of the review procedures, and whether the engagement quality reviewer provided such concurring approval of issuance. Also, the requirements related to retention of and subsequent changes to audit documentation contained in auditing standard number 3 apply with respect to the documentation of the engagement quality review. Finally, the staff has endeavored to draft a standard that would avoid imposing any unnecessary costs. Accordingly, the overall approach of the proposed standard is designed to be efficient. For example, the approach centers the engagement quality reviewer's attention on higher risk areas and utilizes engagement documentation already required by auditing standard number 3 on audit documentation. In addition, the proposed standard is designed to address smaller firm needs. For example, the proposal would allow the engagement quality reviewer to be a qualified individual outside the firm. The staff recommends that the board propose this standard for comment for a period of 75 days. This concludes our comments. Now we'd like to respond to any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Tom and Greg. First, are there any motions in this matter?
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Mr. Niemeyer.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board instruct the staff to release the proposed standards on engagement quality review and propose conforming amendment to the board's interim quality control standards as recommended for public comment for a period of 75 days.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Mr. Chairman.
Radisson.
I second the proposal.
Thank you, Charlie and Bill. The question before the board today is whether it should propose a new audit standard on engagement quality review and a conforming amendment to the board's interim quality control standards. Section 103 of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act mandated that the PCAOB adopt a requirement that each registered public accounting firm provide a concurring or second partner review and approval of each audit report and concurring approval in its issuance by a qualified person associated with the public accounting firm, other than the person in charge of the audit, or by an independent reviewer. Understanding the tangible enhancement to audit quality that a well-performed engagement quality review can provide, the PCAOB invested time and resources to examine thoroughly the existing requirements and current practices. To do so, the PCAOB used a number of the tools available to it, including its inspection and enforcement experience and discussions with a standing advisory group. Based on this input, the board concluded that it could further improve the second partner review process. The proposed standard that the professional staff brings to the board today is the result of this careful work. Importantly, due to the global environment in which the PCAOB and the auditors operate, Tom Ray and his team also evaluated the current requirements in IAASB standards, as both Tom and Greg indicated. Many of the provisions within today's proposal align with these proposed IAASB standards. I thank Tom, Greg, and their colleagues in the Office of the Chief Auditor for their hard work on this proposal. I also thank the staff in the Division of Inspections and Registration and the Division of Enforcement, who collaborated with our standards team by providing insights on current practices and shortcomings that could be addressed in a new standard. The PCAOB's standard setting truly benefits from this type of cross-pollination. To encourage improved practices, the PCAOB shares insights and obtains through its inspection program. For example, last October, it included observations related to concurring partner reviews and a report on certain findings from the 2006 inspections of small firms. The report reminded firms that they should ensure that they are allocating appropriate resources to the performance of effective concurring partner reviews and of the need to conduct the review with objectivity, and due care. The PCAOB stressed in the report that firms also need to ensure that they are selecting competent reviewers to perform the concurring partner review, and if necessary, that a firm should consider engaging as the concurring partner an accountant who is not affiliated with the firm if the firm does not have a qualified individual with the appropriate level of expertise and experience to perform an effective review. The observations described in the October report influenced the proposal that the board is considering today. As Tom and Greg have just described, the proposed standard and conforming amendments would take a risk-based approach to the engagement quality review. The proposed standard builds on the strengths of the board's interim requirement and the best practices of the profession. It would provide for a more explicit focus on identifying and reviewing those areas in the engagement likely to contain higher risk. After performing certain specified procedures, the reviewer would be required to assess whether there are areas within the engagement that pose a higher risk and the engagement team, first, failed to obtain sufficient competent evidence, or second, reached an inappropriate conclusion. In these higher risk areas, the engagement quality reviewer would be required to evaluate whether the engagement team responded appropriately to the assessed risk, the judgments made were reasonable, and the results of the procedures performed support the engagement team's overall conclusion. Due to the high value that the PCAOB places on the benefits of the engagement quality review, the proposal expands the current requirement to cover all engagements conducted in accordance with PCAOB standards. I understand that many firms, beyond those that are currently required to do so, have procedures for concurring procedures substantially in place. And for them, as proposed, such firms would likely only need to modify their procedures. Firms that were not members of the SEC practice section and who are not already voluntarily perform a concurring partner review will need to invest resources to build an effective review in accordance with the new standard. The proposal provides flexibility for smaller firms by, among other things, allowing them to work with qualified individuals outside of their own firm to perform the required review. The reviews themselves are envisioned as being risk-based. This reflects the view that it is possible to increase the likelihood of identifying and correcting deficiencies in an audit prior to issuing the audit report in an efficient manner. As with all standard-setting initiatives, proposed standards benefit from public input. I therefore encourage stakeholders to review this proposal and provide their insights on how it could be improved. We will, as always, carefully consider all comments received. We have seen that engagement quality review are an important element in assuring high-quality audits. I support this proposal and encourage comments to contribute to this important standard-setting initiative. Now turn to my fellow board members for any discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to make a statement and then ask the staff a couple of questions. The engagement quality review standard that the board is considering today will fulfill an important part of the board's statutory mandate. Congress expressly directed the board to include in its standards a requirement for a qualified person to perform a concurring or second partner review of every audit report to be filed with the SEC. For the past 5 years, we've been relying on concurring partner requirements that were developed during the era of self-regulation before the board's creation. However, those requirements are not applicable to all firms that prepare audit reports filed with the commission, since only firms that were in existence in 2003 and were members of the AICPA's SEC practice section need to comply with them. Today's proposal begins the process of bringing the board's concurring review standards in line with Congress's directive. More importantly, the proposed standard would focus renewed attention on what is probably the most common quality control deficiency cited in PCAOB inspection reports. Time and again, the board staff identifies audit deficiencies that a properly performed concurring partner review should have detected and caused to be corrected before the audit report was issued. Based on 4 years of inspections experience, it seems clear that engagement quality reviews have a real potential to reduce the number of after-the-fact audit failure discoveries. Unlike PCOB inspections, and unlike the internal inspections that the major firms perform, the purpose of these reviews is to backstop the engagement team and to identify problems before the audit report is publicly released, while they can still be addressed. That obviously protects investors in a way that no after-the-fact review or inspection can. While it's intended to strengthen concurring reviews, the proposed standard is not an exercise in reinventing the wheel. It builds on, rather than discards, the existing requirements. In my view, the proposal would make four key changes. First, the proposal calls more explicitly than the current standard for a risk-based approach. The reviewer would be required to assess whether there are engagement areas that pose higher risks and to evaluate whether the engagement team performed procedures responsive to those risks. Second, consistent with Congress's direction, the proposed standard would require the reviewer to approve the issuance of the audit report. The interim standards simply require completion of a review, not explicit reviewer approval. Third, under the proposal, the reviewer cannot approve issuance of the audit report if he or she knows or should know that the report is inappropriate. At present, the reviewer determines that nothing has come to his or her attention suggesting that the audit was improperly performed. Fourth, the documentation requirements applicable to the concurring review would become more detailed. Currently, the work papers need only contain evidence that the firm's policies and procedures with respect to the concurring review requirements were complied with. Despite these changes, it bears repeating that for most registered firms, concurring reviews would not be new. The proposal should not have a radical effect on the basic nature of these reviews or on the cost of public company auditing. Many registered firms, including the largest, already have sophisticated review programs. I assume that these firms would not have to make fundamental changes in the design of their programs if the proposed standard is adopted. The accuracy of that assumption, however, is something that I hope will be fully explored as part of the comment process. Finally, it's also important that before the proposal is finalized, the board fully understands how the new standard will affect smaller audit firms, especially those where the reviewer is more likely to be outside the firm rather than a colleague. The potential benefits of a strengthened engagement quality standard are substantial for these firms. We need to make sure, however, that the standard is workable for firms of all sizes and practice types, and it will not have unintended effects on smaller firm practice. To help us understand these issues, I hope the board will receive a wide range of robust and candid public comments. I would like to ask staff a couple of questions to bring out some things that may not be obvious about the proposal. But before I do that, I do want to join in thanking all the people that have worked on this. It's been kind of a long-running project. Tom Ray, Greg Skates, and Keisha Campbell are currently the front line of the effort, so I'll thank them by name, but as already been noted, there are a number of people in general counsel, inspections, and ORA particularly, that have contributed to this, and I thank them all for their efforts. I think the chairman said something similar, that the large firms obviously already have sophisticated and active concurring partner review programs. I wonder what your sense is of how or whether the proposal would require those firms to change the design of their programs. Is this simply a codification of what at least the major firms are currently doing, or will it require some sort of change in their approach to concurring partner review?
Let me provide some thoughts on that question. Yeah, I think as a number of us have already said, we're really building to a large degree on requirements for concurring partner engagement quality control review that were developed by the profession. Plus, as I think you fairly outlined, there's a number of areas where we have added to it or brought various things out more explicitly. For example, I believe we have a more explicit requirement for the engagement quality reviewer to make an assessment, if you will, as to whether there are higher areas within the engagement that pose a higher risk that the engagement team either didn't obtain sufficient evidence or maybe had formed an inappropriate conclusion. And of course, we would then ask the engagement quality reviewer to look at those areas. Now, while we bring in a more explicit requirement for the engagement quality reviewer to perform that assessment, I believe the firms do already incorporate a risk-based element in their existing, at least speaking of the large firms anyway, as to which I'm a little bit more familiar with, do bring in a risk-based assessment into their concurring partner review process. So, having said that, of course, I am interested as well in how the firms are going to react to our specific requirement in terms of whether they think this is going to be a substantial change.
Well, I guess just as a corollary to that question, and I suppose ultimately everything has to be paid for, do you have a sense of what effect this proposal would have on the cost of, let's say, large company, large firm, public company auditing?
Again, sort of really based on the, you know, my understanding of the policies and practices of the larger firms, which I do believe recognize risk in their process, it is possible that the effort and cost associated with our proposed standard won't be significantly different than the costs that are currently being incurred in the engagement quality review.
Well, as I said before, I do hope this is something that we hear about in the comments, and I imagine we will. Let me switch to a different topic. I think you said, Greg, that one of the things that the staff had done in designing this proposal was to look at the IAASB's similar quality review standards, and that this proposal was, you said, similar, substantially similar to what the IAASB has. In what ways is it different? And how would you describe the major differences between what we're doing in the international standard?
One of the principal ways it's different from our proposal compared to the IAASB standards is that the conclusion that the review partner or person comes to at the end, and after they complete their work and the conclusion they draw, under the IAASB standards, as well as under our current interim standard or requirement, that the reviewer is required to conclude that no matters have come to their attention that would cause the reviewer to believe that the engagement was not performed in accordance with the standards of PCLB. That's, again, under the current requirement and under the IAASB standards today. In quite contrast, though, the proposal before us today provides that the engagement quality reviewer must not provide concurring approval of issuance if four things that I mentioned in my remarks. One, the engagement team failed to obtain sufficient competent evidence in accordance with the standards of CCLB, and two, the engagement team reached an inappropriate overall conclusion on engagement, and then three, the firm's report is not appropriate in the circumstances, and four, if the firm is not independent of its client. To me, that is the principal difference under our proposal as compared to the IAASB standards and as compared to our current requirement.
I think it's worthwhile also maybe just to reiterate the more explicit requirement for the engagement quality reviewer to perform a risk assessment. The way the standard is laid out, it provides a direction on certain specific procedures that should be performed in connection with each engagement quality review. And then based on having performed those procedures and the information that the engagement quality reviewer obtains as a result of performing those procedures, in addition to other knowledge that the engagement quality reviewer may have, for example, knowledge about the particular industry that was subject to the audit, the engagement quality reviewer makes this risk assessment and then evaluates whether there are other areas or other procedures that should be performed in connection with the engagement quality review. this type of a risk assessment is not as explicitly drawn out in the standards of the IAASB.
I guess I'm not sure this is quite what you're saying, but I guess what one would hope that the process wouldn't have to be substantially different, whether someone was complying with our standards or with the international standards, although I appreciate your point that the conclusions would have to be phrased differently. The conclusions that underlie the review would be somewhat different.
I think that's fair. I mean, one of the fundamental aspects here, of course, and I think it might have been said, the engagement quality reviewer is not asked to perform auditing procedures or evidence gathering procedures or a re-audit. The engagement quality reviewer's process is to look at the work and the judgments that have already been performed. So fundamentally, the process should be very similar pursuant to our standard or the international standard.
Okay, well, again, that's probably something we'll hear about in the comments, at least I hope it is. I mean, let me turn to the topic of what engagements are covered, and again, you've commented on that. I think, I didn't write it down, Greg, but I think we're talking about integrated audits, financial statement-only audits performed pursuant to our standards, review of unaudited quarterly statements, and these Regulation AB attestation reports, which I'm not sure that most of us were too familiar with before this proposal came along. Oh, and I suppose also a report on remediation of internal controls under auditing standard number 4, if anybody ever were to have such an engagement. Is there anything else currently that this requirement would be subject to?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head if there's other ones specifically. In connection with audits of issuers, those are the primary reports that you mentioned. There could be some others that the engagement team may be requested by the client to perform. They may be asked to perform special reports in connection with their principal lender or others. And those special type reports then would also be subject to the similar review.
And do I understand correctly that in this regard, we're going beyond what Sarbanes-Oxley requires, but if we simply implemented the statute, there would only be the financial statement audits, either integrated or financial statement only?
Yes, we are going beyond that, but we think this is an expectation of the public, that the public would expect this of any auditor, for any auditor to perform this type of function in order to provide the opinion or any type of opinion on the financial statements or in connection with a review.
Okay, there's also a statement in the standard that when the reissuance of the engagement report requires the auditor to update his or her procedures, there has to be an engagement quality review. What does that mean? What would that cover?
Well, there are various circumstances in which the firm would reissue an opinion on financial statements. I think a common one is in connection with a 1933 Act filing, where financial statements are incorporated into a registration statement. The auditor is required to perform certain subsequent events procedures up to the effective date of the registration statement, and then provide a consent that his or her report may be used in connection with that registration statement.
Okay, a consent statement.
Yeah, consent, yeah.
And for example, if there's a change of auditors, we would need a consent from the prior auditors to include financial statement or their opinion on last year's financial statements or 2 years ago financial statements in the current filing.
That's correct.
We hear a lot from issuers from time to time about the difficulties of getting those consents from prior auditors when there's been a change in an auditor. Now there's going to have to be, in effect, going to have to be both a consent from the prior auditor and from the prior auditor's engagement quality reviewer. Does the reviewer have to be the same person as it was originally, or could you hire a different engagement quality reviewer? How is this going to affect that consent process, again, particularly in the change of auditor situation?
Well, there's a number of questions in there. Essentially, the way I would look at it is I wouldn't look at this as being another step in addition to a firm having to provide a consent. essentially the way the standard is structured is it's the engagement team's responsibility to make sure that an engagement quality review has been performed and that they obtain concurring approval of issuance. So from an external perspective, it really should still be one point of contact, the people responsible for the particular engagement, rather than having sort of a separate, if you will, discussion between the partner who originally signed the opinion and the engagement quality reviewer. So I wouldn't expect that the standard would create, sort of add any additional burden in that regard. I think another relevant point here related to predecessor auditors is that the subsequent events procedures that a predecessor auditor is required to perform pursuant to the standards in the PCAOB are substantially more limited than the procedures that a continuing auditor would be required to perform. And in fact, a predecessor auditor to a fairly large degree can rely on certain representations provided by the successor auditor in performing those subsequent events procedures. So the review that therefore would be required by the engagement quality reviewer is going to be on a more limited amount of work that predecessor auditor would have to perform. And I think I might have forgot one aspect of your question, which was, does it have to be the same person? The standard doesn't explicitly require that it be the same person who has to perform that work. I think we need to recognize that there are going to be people who retire or people who are required to rotate off for independence reasons and that sort of thing. So we're going to see different people involved in performing these engagement quality reviews over time.
Let me ask you another question along those lines. I mean, particularly in the small firm world, the standard does envision that the reviewer might not be associated with the firm that's issuing, or it might not be, what should I say, regularly associated with the firm that's issuing the audit report. You could hire someone from another registered firm, for example, to be the reviewer. And if I understand correctly, the reviewer has to be independent of the audit client, as independence is defined in the SEC's rules, just as the engagement partner, for example, or the engagement team does. If the reviewer is from a different firm, does the firm have to be independent, or just the reviewer himself? And I guess one thing I'm thinking of, for example, could the firm be performing some sort of non-audit service for the audit client that wouldn't be permissible for the auditor if the reviewer himself isn't involved in those services?
Well, we just so happen to be talking about that question with our general counsel earlier, and I think maybe Gordon might be able to.
Let me try to answer that if I can. And I should begin by saying, of course, that most independence rules, including the restrictions on non-audit services from Title II of the Act, are implemented through SEC rules. And I don't want to speak for the SEC, of course. And in addition to parsing through the specific rules, there's always a general standard of independence that applies. But all that said, my understanding of the SEC rules is, as you said, that the EQR reviewer, him or herself, would be considered part of the audit engagement team and therefore become subject to specific SEC independence rules. But as a general matter, the firm employing that EQR reviewer would not necessarily become subject to those same rules and therefore have to comply with the same independence requirements as the firm issuing the report. Of course, PCB itself has some independence rules, the tax services rules, and those apply to registered firms and their affiliates, and so those rules as well would not necessarily require that firm employing the EQR reviewer to do the same things the firm issuing the report would have to do to be independent.
Okay, well that's, I guess assuming that's the correct interpretation, as you say, of the SEC's rules, I guess that would give smaller firms somewhat more flexibility in selecting a reviewer. People might have, I guess, views pros and cons on the underlying policy issue. Let me finish where I started, and I think I asked you at the beginning about impact on large firm quality review procedures. Do you have a sense of what the impact of this proposal is going to be on smaller firms, maybe particularly ones that aren't currently subject to a concurring partner review, and how the cost of small company audits might be affected by this proposal?
A couple thoughts on that. I think the first is that I think historically, based on experience, the engagement quality review is a relatively small aspect of the cost of an engagement. As I said earlier, they are not re-auditing. They are not performing evidence-gathering procedures. The process is one to review and evaluate the judgments of the engagement team and focus on those areas where there's more risk. And again, review the work rather than actually perform additional evidence-gathering procedures. So overall, the EQR component in an audit should be relatively small. We certainly do recognize, however, that particularly for firms that are not performing an engagement quality review, this is going to be an added cost and an added burden for them. But of course, the Act does specifically direct that the requirement be applicable to the issuance of all audit reports for issuers.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. The time and the views, and I guess as I said before, I think this is particularly a subject where we have a lot to learn from the public comments.
Charlie? It is true that the proposal before us today is an important step to fulfill one of the express requirements of Sarbanes-Oxley. But even more importantly, it's a significant step in strengthening the audit quality for the protection of investors. To my mind, the Act singled out engagement quality reviews as an area for improvement because such reviews provide firms with a mechanism to find and correct audit problems before the audit is complete. That's good for both the audit firms and investors. I think the proposal before us today does a good job setting forth procedures that, done thoughtfully, would enable the firm to identify and address audit deficiencies. The proposal does not require the reviewer to re-audit the engagement team's work, but it does draw on the reviewer's own insights as a person vested in the quality of the audit, but also distanced from the front lines. That's an important improvement over the existing standards. Anyone who follows PCLB inspection reports knows that over the past 5 years, we have found numerous audit deficiencies. In my mind, that's good, because it leads to corrections of past problems when necessary and minimizes the chances of similar deficiencies in the future. Of course, a thoughtful engagement quality reviewer, who after all has access to the same information that we do as part of our inspection, could find and focus the firm on these deficiencies before the firm has actually audit been inspected. That would be even better for investors because it would lead to these deficiencies being corrected before investors relied on the audit. I'm therefore very pleased that we're able to propose this standard today. Like any proposal, though, public comment will be important to helping us finalize the standard. In this regard, there are two points I would like to highlight for potential commenters. First, in our release, we ask whether we should set forth an overall objective for the quality engagement quality review. To my mind, the answer is yes. But it's important that we think carefully about how to articulate that objective so as to achieve the intended result and not unintended result. If I were to articulate that objective today, I would say that it is for an audit firm through an engagement quality review to identify audit deficiencies and address them before concluding the audit. But I am very interested to see what commenters have to say on the subject. Second, I hope commenters will focus on the documentation component of this proposal. As our release points out, our overall documentation standard, auditing standard number 3, would not apply to the reviewer's work. Instead, the proposal includes standalone documentation requirements. What I'm interested in knowing from commenters is whether any additional concepts in auditing standard number 3 should be expressly incorporated in the proposed standard. In particular, auditing standard number 3 includes a provision on how firms can demonstrate that they perform required procedures even if they fail to adequately document them. To my mind, the documentation process described in auditing standard number 3 applies equally to engagement quality reviews. In a similar vein, auditing standard number 3 established an experienced reviewer standard to explain how documentation should be judged.
commenter should tell us whether it would be helpful to reiterate or otherwise reference these concepts in this proposal. While I emphasize these points, I don't want to leave the impression that I have any reservations about this proposal. I think it's a very good proposal, and I am pleased to be able to release it for public comment today. I think, as we mentioned earlier, it's been quite a long voyage, but I think that the thoughtfulness that's gone into preparing this is reflected in the proposal. And I'd also like to appreciate my thanks to the staff, numerous staff that's worked on it, in particular Greg and Tom. So thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, first off, I want to say how much I appreciate the excellent work that's been done by all concerned. I think this is a great improvement over the current situation. Among other things, it will close the SEC practice section loophole, which for 5 years, even up to today, permits firms that weren't members of that group to continue to be registered firms and to audit public companies without even having any form of review. I won't get into why it took so long, but you know, I think that it is a useful thing to recognize that not all firms have been alike in terms of what we expect of them. My thinking has been affected a lot, as I gather my colleagues has as well, by the inspection reports. Far too often, regrettably, concerns have been expressed, properly so, by our inspection force about apparent deficiencies in the quality of the reviews that have taken place. And I think what particularly has struck me about this have been instances in which the firm itself has identified the client as being higher than average risk, but there's been very little evidence, if any, that the engagement reviewer has structured that work to take into account that heightened concern about risk, which, as I said, was identified by the firm itself. I guess the question that's been in my mind pretty much along the line here is, you know, what can we reasonably expect? Is it going to be possible to achieve significant improvements? And I'm satisfied that the answer to that is yes. And there are a number of reasons I say that. One that I particularly want to mention, because it hasn't been mentioned before, except very tangentially, has to do with academic research. As the board knows, a series of synthesis papers has been prepared by volunteer teams put together by the auditing section of the American Accounting Association to review actual practices and to review studies that have been done in a number, 8 or 9 areas of importance to the board and to the profession. And one of them has to do with these engagement quality reviews. And they have clearly identified, under current standards, a number of instances and approaches which are better than others in terms of achieving those objectives. In that connection, let me also repeat the name of Gary Fulstrom, who oversaw that project as well as taking the initial lead in this. And I think that is merely the latest evidence of the benefits that can come from the board working more closely over time with the profession. So I'm satisfied that that improvements can be made, that this proposal will be a positive step in that direction, and I look forward to comments which we may receive during the 75-day period.
Thank you, Bill. No further discussion. I'll put the question to the board. All those in favor of approving the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the motion is carried. There's no further business. This concludes our agenda today. The meeting is now adjourned. It is 10:25. We will rise as the open meeting and reconvene at 10:35 for our closed board meeting. Thank you very much.